Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in, Castle Wayne Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, Dwight Albert from the Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin, Phil Brilo from PBA.com. That's all the extra frame coverage. You hear him pretty much on every single broadcast. Is that pretty much it?
It's pretty much it.
Pretty much every single broadcast now. So let's see. Mike Jakubowski left. And then you brought in Van McNeil for a few shows, former host of this show.
Yeah,
right?
Van helped us out at World Series of Bowling recently. So.
And then who else hops in there with you besides Van?
Jeff Goodger, who's out of Grand Rapids,
Michigan.
He's been there for a while. Yep. And then Craig Elliott, who helps us out on occasion.
I don't think I've heard him before.
Yeah, he used to be from Michigan. He just recently moved to San Antonio, Texas with his wife.
Oh.
And he's stationed out of there now. So Craig and Van covered a lot of the qualifying at World Series of Bowling.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Go out to Vegas. That's a tough gig.
Reno.
Well, Vegas. I meant Nevada. Yeah, you're right. Reno, yes.
And the guy you're forgetting, Marshall Holman. At least for U.S. Open, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, and he helped us out during match play at the World Series of Bowling as well. So
heard the call during the week.
He's probably more entertaining off than he is on.
Oh, definitely. Wow. Well, he's pretty entertaining both ways, but he's got some stories that, yeah.
I love Marshall Holman on TV and so forth. But I've also heard stories of Marshall Holman off mic, too, that are very, very entertaining.
Yeah. I made a comment to one of my customers who always listens to the show, Greg, and I said, he's the Tony Romo of bowling.
Oh, no.
You wouldn't agree with that?
No. Go ahead. Lay out your argument. I want to hear what it is. Go ahead.
Well, the insights, like what Romo does.
Oh, I thought you meant it in a career, as a career. Yeah. I was like, heck no.
Well, I mean, everyone talks about a great job Romo does on the air.
No, you're saying the TV. You're not
TV,
saying career
right.
versus career.
Oh,
not saying bowling career versus
TV. No, right. Okay. I'm talking about commentator.
Yeah. That's fine. I thought you were comparing careers.
You get anyone ever say that to you, Phil? That he's like the Tony Romo?
No,
bowling?
I haven't anybody say that to me yet.
Greg and I both had a good laugh over it.
And with
we thought that was pretty good.
With all due respect to your analysis of broadcasters, Tony Romo is a Marshall Holman of broadcasters. Marshall Holman's been doing it a lot longer than Tony Romo. Tony Romo just started.
Yes.
So if anything, Tony Romo is ripping off Marshall Holman's gig and what Marshall Holman does.
True.
I'm just being sarcastic. But yeah.
I'd
but
agree.
I mean, that's
I like his insight. That's the biggest thing I like with Holman is his insight.
I love Holman. I absolutely love Holman. I would take Holman over Peterson any day of the week if given the option. But you think Peterson's funny.
Oh, he has
a sense of humor. You like his sense of humor.
I just cracked up to him. Yeah, but I mean, Phil, what's it like working with him?
Well, it's a little different pace with Extra Frame most of the time because if we're covering match play rounds and that type of thing, they both get a little more time to talk and give some insight where if we're on, you know, ESPN or CBS Sports Network, you know, they have to stay very, you know, on time into what's going on between frames. Just, you know, we can get a little more in depth sometimes with the coverage because we're covering two or three different matches, and it's pretty neat that way. They both have their unique insights to the game. You know, Randy's very much still in with the modern game, has kept up with things. He was very competitive till a couple of years ago, even on the PBA 50 tour.
Right.
Where Marshall, once he got done with his playing career in the late 90s, was kind of like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this. But he still keeps up with what's going on in the sport. And he's even trying, you know, he was asking us some questions off the air with, you know, why are these guys trying to do this and keep up with the equipment. And Marshall goes, okay, it makes sense. And he just instantly relate that during the Extra Frame telecast. So.
And then to clear it, because people ask me at the shop, and this is the answer I give. So if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But everyone asked during the U.S. Open, where was Randy Peterson? And he's contracted with ESPN, correct? And that was on CBS Sports Network?
And also the U.S. Open is run by the USBC and the Bowling Proprietors Association of America. So it's their personnel that they pick to be on the CBS Sports Network telecast. And they chose Marshall Holman to be the color analyst on that particular show.
So they could have chose Randy.
They could have chose Randy if they wanted to, because Randy, when we had the main event PBA finals on CBS Sports Network this past spring and summer, Randy did the call on that with Dave Ryan. So really it's up to whichever entity is actually running that event.
It's a different way that they do it, but they both do a great job at it for being a color guy.
Yeah, and it's been fun working with them in Extra Frame, like I said, because it's just you get a little bit of a different insight from them.
Well, they both got stories.
Yeah, and you get a little, they get a little more time to talk about it and that type of thing as well. So I didn't get to see Randy at all at World Series of Bowling or passing across because we were out of there before the ESPN tapings were occurring. But it's always fun working with Randy as well.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about the play-by-play team of the PBA Tour and so forth, and you talk about the analyst role. And it's funny because I think about locally here in Milwaukee, those of you listening around the country on 105.7 FM, the Fan app, don't really know what I'm talking about. You'll know one of the names, though, for sure. But if you talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, for instance, right, and I do the Milwaukee Bucks Pick and Save postgame show. We'll be back on there tomorrow night after Bucks-Celtics. We had John McLaughlin out at our toy drive this week. And by the way, thanks to everybody that was involved in our toy drive for Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. For the 11th straight year, we did better than the year previous. So thanks so much. It might have been outside of the early ones, this might have been like my favorite toy drive that we've had. It was just amazing. On Friday, you know, you get that last push. We always do. Thursday and Friday, we always get that last push. But everybody that was out there, and, you know, all of us have pretty much been there for the entire run. Gary's been there the entire run. Rami wasn't out there. He was back here producing, for some of it. But he's been part of the station for most of the run. I have never seen it where at about quarter after 4:30, we literally had a line of people waiting to make donations at that table. And that line was there to like 5:45. It was just constant people getting in line, whether it's swiping a credit card, dropping cash, dropping off bags of toys. There was a line at the table. I've never seen a line at the table at any point during any toy drive in the 11 years. It was amazing. And then, you know, the Admirals game started at 5:30. So we were on to like 5:40 or so talking with Aaron Sims. And we still had people, some guy pulled up at like 6:03 with a box of toys, pulled out of his van and dropped off a box of toys. It was incredible. So anyways, so we had John McLaughlin out, and John McLaughlin is the analyst on Bucks basketball games. We always call him Mr. Milwaukee Buck. He was a great player back in the day for the Bucks, and he has been with Jim Paschke forever. Well, we asked John McLaughlin about, you know, how much longer do you plan on doing this? Cause he has cut back his schedule significantly. And he said, you know, probably sooner rather than later as far as getting out completely, but that hasn't really been decided yet by himself, that the Bucks are giving him total leeway to do whatever he wants, which is a good job by Peter Fagan and the Bucks ownership to respect McLaughlin and what he's done for this organization. And, of course, he runs the Mac Fund, for those of you that don't know that. So he's a busy guy. So you take him and the emotions that he is, and I'm sure you guys have watched McLaughlin over the years, the one time where he got so mad during the game, he took off and slammed his headphones on the counter and broke them. During the game when they had to come get him a new pair of headphones during the game because he broke his headphones. I think they got him a new pair of headphones. I don't know if they fixed it or not, but that was like one of my favorite moments ever. So you have him. So lives, dies with the team. Then you look at the Milwaukee Brewers and Bob Uecker, who has been there forever. And I've always said that when Bob Uecker is done, what are we going to think of? We're going to think of all the great stories he's told on the air over the years, how much fun it was. And whoever replaces him is going to be up against it, no matter who it is. Now, I keep lobbying for Gorman Thomas because I think that's the closest one you have to getting the funny stories and being able to relate and still have great analysis of the game and all that. I don't know what they're going to do. So those guys are linked to their teams. Prior to Larrivee coming to the Packers, it was who? It was Jim Irwin and Max McGee, right? And they were the Packers. And no other team could understand why anybody would like them, but they were so about the Packers. They lived and they died with every play of the Packers, and they called some bad teams, boys.
yes.
But they got to call a Super Bowl too, a Super Bowl win, right? That was them. Now you look at the PBA Tour. Now tell me if I'm wrong here.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going with this.
Now just tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
All right? This is different, in my opinion, the National Football League, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, all of that. It's different than all of it because all of those other games have their own home announcers, right? Have their own national announcers, and there's sets of them that cover them because there's multiple national games a week or whatever, so there's different guys across the board. I was thinking about this. Wouldn't it be nice to have some type of long run with the same play-by-play team like they had back in the day there for a while? I mean, you can't get into a rhythm if you're Randy Peterson, and I think that's who Tom Clark is hitching his wagon to, he likes Randy on the call, fine. But he can't even get himself into a run here because you having to keep switch play-by-play guys seemingly every, what, 2 years? Something like that? I mean, it is a difficult position for Randy Peterson. Again, now look, I don't have an issue with Randy Peterson personally. I'm just not a fan of his style necessarily on the air, but it's fine. I don't have an issue with it necessarily. But he is very difficult for him personally to get into a rhythm on a call when you keep switching his play-by-play guys. The best guy to talk to that about is Uecker, because Uecker gets him switched all the time too. But he had a long run with Pat Hughes. He's had some longer runs with different guys. The BBA Tour, to a degree, it's kind of out of their control to a degree as well. Oh, yeah. What do you think, Dwight?
I get this all the time in the shop still, even recently. Everyone still keeps – what do you think of when you think of the PBA Tour? Who are the two guys that come to mind right away?
Schenkel and Burton.
Right.
Oh, that's Burton.
Chris Schenkel,
awesome.
Years ago. Nelson, yes. Burton.
Right.
I mean, there was your foundation. But, I mean, even before Schenkel, wasn't it Billy Whalen?
Billy Whalen was the color guy. And there was a while for the PBA where their play-by-play guys were changing around. Schenkel really wasn't in on stuff until the 70s, the early to mid-70s.
Right. But they had that long, long run, and unfortunately Chris passed away and Nelson retired from it.
But
so
Nelson's still good.
That way.
Nelson's still good. Nelson, wasn't he on the call last year, I think, for a game or a match or two?
He's been on in the past couple of years.
He's still
times.
Good. Boy.
But people still think of the PBA, and they think of Chris Schenkel and Nelson Burton Jr. Only.
Oh, absolutely. And I think now it's gotten to the point where Rob Stone made people talk.
Yep.
Some people loved him.
I saw him last night on TV.
It was so polarized.
He's totally blown up. Boy, is he blown up. He is making a ton of money doing soccer, doing college football. That dude is just raking it in.
Yeah, and a lot of it started with what he was doing with the PBA and the stuff he did at ESPN back in the day.
And I still, last night on TV when I was watching him, I wanted to have him scream out so bad, Hambone, at some point during the football
just
game.
Just to say it.
Right.
Just to say it.
But I'll tell you what, Dave Lamont working with Randy Peterson has really been good this last season or so. I've learned a few things
Lamont's
from Dave
solid.
Lamont. He's
very
solid.
Very solid.
He lets Randy kind of do his thing. He doesn't try to jump over the top of Randy, and they work pretty well together. And I've had the chance to talk to Dave at events once in a while when the ESPN crew gets there and we're still there with Extra Frame. He comes in the booth with us, and he knows what's going on in these events. Some of these guys usually just come in, Lon McCarron, come in, I'm calling Bowling, I'm getting Gary Thorne, calling Bowling, getting out of here. Lamont, you ask him what happened earlier in that event, he'll tell you exactly what's going on because he's been paying attention to it.
He's prepped for it.
Yeah. But still, if you ask the Bowling fan out there right now who they'd rather have, I have to think that Rob Stone's name would come up the most yet.
He'd be my one. Yeah. Every day of the week, he'd be my one. Now, I'll say this. We all might have selective memory loss here, but there were a lot of people that couldn't stand Rob Stone.
Yeah, now
when he
they
was
miss
a play-by-play guy.
Now they
couldn't
miss him.
Stand it because he was bringing up his own phrases, and that's not how bowling was in the 70s, and he's changing my sport, and he's too emotional. He gets too excited. Man, shut up. That dude, again, helped put – do you remember – now, again, I don't want to call anybody out, but that dude got them more ESPN time outside of bowling on Sports Center and Big Plays because of his funny, crazy calls.
Exactly.
I mean, they were enjoying them. And I agree with you, whoever said it, Phil or Dwight, whoever you said, that helped get him a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because it showed a different side of his personality a little bit that, again, if you knew him personally, you knew he had. But that really kind of opened it up to the comedic, fun side that he could provide. Being a studio host, you have to talk a lot more than you do if you're doing play-by-play or whatever else, so you have to know the guy's personality. I think that had to have helped him.
I'll never forget the show that Pete Weber was on, and he had four in a row, and he turned back and looked at Rob Stone and said, hey, are you going to call it? You see Pete Weber saying it, and Rob Stone says, Hambone, and he does the crotch chop.
Yeah.
So he even had it timed
with
Rob Stone.
Oh, yeah.
It's just awesome.
As a bowling fan, you can't help but laugh at that.
Well, and it's
just funny stuff.
It's not just the bowling fans. It's getting the people on the fringe to keep watching. That's really the thing right now for the PBA.
People were bringing Hambone signs to the bowling events.
Get these people around the fringe. I mean, Mookie Betts shot 300 at the World Series of Bowling, and within 2 days, we had 150,000 people that watched a clip of Mookie.
Right.
Mookie from Extra Frame.
Right.
150,000 people. There's not that many bowling. There's 9,000 Extra Frame subscribers.
It's such a big event. It's a rare thing to see another athlete from another sport do what he did at World Series of Bowling.
How legitimate is he?
Oh, he's good.
Oh, yeah. I'd have no doubt that if he took more time to work on his game, he could cash checks on the PBA Tour.
Because, I mean, you were, Phil, you were out there, obviously, watching him. The rest of us seeing clips and highlights on YouTube or whatever.
Yep.
You were actually out there. Now, I read quotes from him because I was following it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he kept saying, well, the first game on a pattern, I had to figure out what was going on. And then after that, you could see in my scores, I figured it out and I was fine. If he bowled more, would he have been able to figure it out sooner?
If he worked in his game more, yes. I think it's a matter of, you know, it's like seeing a curveball.
Because it's like, that's just it. I mean, for him, it seemed like once I found my line, I was fine. Because then he could adjust once he got the initial line. But it would seem like it was an issue finding the initial line for him.
Right. It's like that any pro that goes out on the tour, if they're going out in their first year, they have to figure it out too.
Yeah, and you got to remember,
it's the physical talent to do it, though.
When Mookie had that 300 on extra frame on the scorpion pattern, that was his only game over 200 that block.
Yeah,
he just happened to put it all together. And the people that started on that pair were a couple of high rev players, and all of a sudden Tommy Jones reminded them, "Hey, these guys started here. You may have to make a little bit of a move." And you know, without the help of Tommy Jones, Mookie doesn't shoot 300 that game. You know, Tommy and Mookie were crossing all week, and you know, Tommy's both working with Ebonite, giving each other tips and helping them out and that kind of thing. And Mookie's got talent. There's no doubt about it. Yep. Mookie had time to work on his bowling game more.
Yeah, he is not a Terrell Owens, Sparky. This guy's got good body
positions.
Oh,
I can tell that based on watching him throw the ball. I mean, at that end, he has a history from when he was younger of being a really good bowler. So it's not like he just figured out how to bowl. Now, T.O., I don't think was ever a bowler at any point prior to deciding to try and do it in the PBA. This kid was a legitimate bowler growing up.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, one day in high school, Mookie Betts shot 825. Bowling, and then went and played for his high school at night basketball and put in 25 points. Neither one of them being his first two sports. Mike Fagan told me that one.
Yep.
And it was just an amazing stat where, here's Mookie, 25 points in a high school basketball game, 825 in the lanes.
825, way more impressive.
Neither one of those his primary sport.
Yeah. Right. But 825, way more impressive. So I don't care what anybody says. Yeah. He could have scored 40, and I would have said 825, way more impressive. Yeah.
So here's my question for you guys. Is that the biggest story of World Series of Bowling so far?
Well, because of the qualifying rounds, I'd say that's that and how much of the international field has done well.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about qualifying. That coming up next. It is the Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. Stay tuned. He's Phil Brilow from PBA.com. Dwight Albert from the Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. We'll find out how his summer went. And Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, just doing what I do. Be back after this. Welcome back, Castle Lake, Spare Time Bowling Show. See Sparky Pfeiffer. Phil Brilow, PBA.com, chair dancing over there in the corner. Dwight Albrecht, Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. And we'll hear from Dwight and how things are going over the Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin in just a bit because I have questions.
Uh-oh.
See, it's been, y'all don't realize this. I mean, we kind of like communicate a little bit, but really not much. And to a certain degree, especially when the bowling events are going on, I don't really want to get into it with these guys because I'd rather just bring it up on the air, whatever else comes up once we get back or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So you brought up, Phil, the international aspect of things for the World Series of Bowling. All right. So where are we at from that standpoint as far as how many people were bowling in it from, you know, other countries last year to this year and so forth?
I believe the final total was 27 other countries in the U.S. that were there. You're looking at some of these teams now, some of these international players are coming in from Japan with Shota Kawazoa and a couple of great players from Malaysia.
Nobody knows who that guy is, by the way, besides you.
Yeah.
But that's good, though.
No, I do.
You do. Okay, so two of you know. Okay.
Hey, didn't he make the Japan Cup final?
Yeah, he was second in the DHC Japan Invitational last year.
He's kind of a stockier guy.
Yeah, kind of a stockier guy, and he led the Shark qualifying this year. At the World Series of Bowling, so he's starting to get more and more used to the different conditions.
Is he going
to
stay over here and try and bowl on the tour?
His commitment was 2017. I don't know if he's going to stay in the U.S. in 2018. He was kind of basing himself out of the L.A. area all year long, and he was driving to events with his wife and that kind of thing. Yeah, so he was really making a commitment to the U.S. and the PBA Tour in 2017. Yeah. Whether it continues in 2018, we'll have to find out if he's going to keep hopping both sides of the Pacific.
Who
or
else
not.
You got?
Rafiq Ismail from Malaysia, a lefty. You watch him go, you just go, wow, it's the second coming of Ryan Simonelli. Just speed and power,
unreal.
Left side, and he bowled really well.
How old is he? Is
Is he younger?
21, 22.
So he's younger.
All these international players, a lot of them really, really young. I mean, you've got Jesper Svensson, you know, Jesper making a big impact. Yeah. You know, there's some other players from Europe that are starting to make a big impact as well. Richie Teese got through the qualifying on one of the patterns, and you'll see him on ESPN from England. And so, you know, they're kind of teasing him. I guess Stu and Dom aren't the best bowlers from England now.
Mm. Oh, Lord.
And
okay, so this is the thing now. Because now the PBA gets itself into a newer territory here the last couple of years. And I think now they've got to figure out what they're going to do with it. Because, and I don't know the results. I didn't look at the results of World Series of bowling, and I'm not going to. I'm just going to watch it on TV like I do every other year, other than when I used to be out in Vegas. Watch it on TV, take my notes, come in here, and react to it. Now, Phil obviously knows because he's, you know all of them, right? You recorded all of them, right? So he knows all the results. But I think depending on the number of young guys that are still popping up on TV, they have to figure out how they want to do this. And I'm telling you, if you market it correctly, it might get you a little extra pop. I mean, you can call them the young guns. You can call them whatever you want to call them. But something to where, you know, maybe you have a commercial or two with the stars of tomorrow or whatever else, right? Have a shots of Roth and Holman, the stars of yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. The stars of present. And then I don't even know what Rash did. Did Rash do anything? Is he going to be on any of these TV shows?
He's not going to be on any of the shows. He was kind of just a little above average during the whole run.
Yeah. Okay, so forget him. Belmo?
You'll see a lot of Belmo.
Okay, so, you know, Jason Belmont.
And that was
going to
be my point.
So Jason Belmont, you throw a couple of the guys that are going to be on TV shows, right? The stars of today. And then throw up a couple of these young guns that you'll see, too. The stars of tomorrow, the NBA's future brighter. Something like that. Yeah. And just kind of put all of them together. Names you'll need to know, you know, in the future. Something like that. Come up with something to where you can introduce these young guys to the fans, maybe before they see him on TV, to a certain degree. Because, let's be honest about this. Core bowling fans, they're going to go on PBA.com and see who's in the field. And if they don't recognize a bunch of names, more than likely they're not going to turn it on. And if they do,
I disagree with
then
that.
They will.
I disagree with that.
You disagree. Okay,
I totally disagree. I think at some point, doesn't the fan want to see someone new or a different name in there?
Well, come on, man.
Otherwise, you just got done saying
about Burton and whatchamacallit that whole time.
Yeah, but what I hear in the shop is it's the same five guys.
That's what it was. Correct.
You know, that's what I hear in the shop. So are those customers correct? Do they want to see different names and new people?
I think that the more variety, the better. You know, back in the day, it was you'd see Earl Anthony and Mark Roth five or six times during the year.
Right.
But you'd see
Holman
other guys in there as well. Who would beat them? Who would knock them off? The name John O'Drobnik, probably to bowling fans of this day, is still large because of that, what he went through when he beat Roth and Holman and Earl on the same show back in the day at the Quaker Stake. They want to see the guys they know, but they want to see some new people as well.
Right.
I mean, Anthony Simonson, when he busted out on the scene, all of a sudden, hey, here's this 19-year-old kid that just won the USBC Masters.
And you know, super nice kid, too.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, you got to get the names to replace the older players as they're making their way out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of happening more now than it did in the past. I mean, if you ask a lot of guys, you know, how Parker Bone and Norm Duke and Pete Weber are still on the tour in their 50s, that never happened in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Guys were in their 30s and they were done.
Right.
Because they either blew out their wrists or they were just mentally fried and just done.
So it wasn't because of competition. It was because they were physically just spent.
Physically spent, and it was a different release with the equipment. Obviously, the equipment has lengthened a lot of these guys' careers.
Now explain that.
Oh, you don't need to grip it and rip it. Back in the day,
exactly.
It was grip it and rip it. Feel the burn in your fingers when you let go of the ball. All these guys were tearing apart their wrists and ligaments and all that stuff. Yeah. You don't need that nowadays. The softer you are with coming out of the ball,
exactly,
the better it is to impart rotation in the ball.
Back in the 70s, Sparky, they had these what they called stretched fingertip spans, and you'd always see Mark Roth kind of dig his hand into
My dad had it on his ball.
Yeah, but that was the era back then. Exactly what Phil said about grip it and rip it, and these guys' hands were just mincemeat, and today it's just more let it go or be more free.
Well, the ball moves better, though. Right?
I mean,
because
of
technology, you don't have to work as hard because the ball is designed to move. Back then, those balls weren't designed to move as much.
They were our plastic balls of today.
Right. pretty much. And they were urethane, obviously. But yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Well, 70s was plastic.
All urethane, plastic, right.
Yeah, didn't come until the early 80s.
Yeah, but even urethane, these guys need to trick their releases a little bit.
Well, because there's no weight blocking the ball.
Yeah, and on a lot of those urethanes.
Well, then, based on that, then, so are we saying then the game is easier today than it was?
Physically, it's easier on the body. It's physically easier on the body. I think it's tougher nowadays because the way that these bowling balls change the oil patterns so much, it's more of a mental chess game. The mental game is really where.
Were there as many oil patterns to deal with back then as there is today?
It was a spray gun back in the day on the PBA Tour.
That's what I thought.
Or if you had a modern, it was a basic lane machine.
Exactly.
So you didn't have like 10 different patterns you had to try and figure out how to break down and play against.
Well, you played the track.
A lot of times that was it. It was especially in the 60s and 70s with the softer.
Has that ever come up with Holman as far as, you know, how he thinks he might have done on the tour today with the modern technology, but all the different lane conditions, everything goes along with it, seeing how all these other kids are bowling and stuff like that? Yep. I mean, Holman loves himself, so I'm sure he said he'd do great, but I just wonder what his reaction would be.
Well, no, because when the reactive resin bowling balls came out in 92-93, that's when he was kind of on the decline of his career. And he said basically that he didn't learn how to use the new equipment.
Right.
He just fought.
He refused to.
He won one title in 96, and he goes, I got lucky for a week.
Remember the show in 92-93? Who did he lose to? He lost to Mark McDowell throwing the Excalibur, and Holman was using a black UDOT on TV. And lost to McDowell because McDowell had such incredible ball reaction.
Right.
Take nothing away from Mark McDowell's physical game. Right.
Yeah.
But it was that next Monday we had 40 calls at the shop. I want what he had. Mm-hmm. I want that same ball.
You don't get that anymore, I bet.
No. But that was when resin changed what we know. Right. For what we know for equipment-wise, correct.
Well, also, back then, you only had six or seven different ball releases out of a company in a year, like Columbia or Storm. You had six or seven tops.
Now it's every 90
now
days.
Now it's six or seven every 90 days. Yeah, exactly. So
correct.
That's but what I think. That doesn't help the ball sales sometimes because it's not, you know, with NASCAR was always, went on Sunday, buy, you know, sell on Monday.
Exactly. But I got a great story for you. Before Roth had his stroke, he was at one of our trade shows we go to in Chicago at Vernon Hills, and resin is out by then. So this had to be late 90s, early 2000s. Well, we had the same question, if Roth had resin, because of Roth's turn in game, what he would be like with resin. And, well, I got a chance with my own eyes to see Mark Roth throw, even though Mark's at the end of his career at that point already, before the stroke, throw a resin bowling ball, and I had to pick my jaw off the floor. If this guy had resin, he would have been untouchable on the tour. So, oh, my God.
And now it's funny, rolling it back, we had an event this past June on the PBA Tour, and if you saw it all on Extra Frame, it was the Billy Hardwick Memorial. And you were limited to polyester bowling balls, pancake weight blocks. So basically anything that was styled like an old Columbia Yellow Dot or something of that nature.
You used to throw a Yellow Dot.
And, of course, who comes out on top? 24-year-old kid just out of college for his PBA title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when these bowlers are that good, they can throw anything on anything.
Yep.
Let's be honest.
Well, Jeff Carter. Jeff Carter wins the plastic ball challenge against Pete Weber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the big thing was Carter versus Weber.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, match.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah,
so
that's good stuff.
You miss those shows? Do you miss those shows, Phil? Plastic ball challenge shows?
It's neat. It's neat when the Team Masters does it. We cover that on Extra Frame as well. That's always an interesting tournament.
Is that good for PBA, though? That one week where they did the plastic ball challenge?
I think we had a lot of viewers that week on Extra Frame. I think it's just something where it's kind of a throwback. You know, you're never going to see the guys on the PBA, on a PGA Tour throwing, you know, or hitting persimmon woods or anything like that. But it's kind of neat to
I bet you they could.
To roll it back and watch a guy like Chris Barnes go, you know, hey, I got to change, you know, I got to change my hand position, grip it and rip it and all this other stuff.
I bet you money that if they, that would be a ton of money. But if they spend a boatload of money to go out there with old clubs, the whole deal, with old technology and all that stuff, and made special balls with how they used to be made, and really went, I bet you it would be the highest TV-rated PGA tournament that they've probably had in 10 years. Because Tiger hasn't been good in that long. So, I mean, at least, for sure, because everybody thinks, a lot of people think, that these guys wouldn't be nearly this good if they played back in the era with Jack and Chi-Chi and Lee Trevino and all that. That is what the common perception is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the ball, the clubs and everything else. They can't do, like you were saying, what the PBA can do. So these young kids can show you, yeah, I'd be just as good back then too, yeah, if you gave me their equipment, because I'm doing it right now with their equipment. But on the other side, the PGA Tour, they can't do it. They can't. It'd be too expensive.
One thing that you're not bringing up, though, from, like, say, the 60s and 70s to modern era is, and again, our friend Tiger Woods changed it all as my physical therapist, and I always have this talk, is Tiger was the one that changed how the golf athlete
trains
today. Correct. He brought his own trainers, his own crew, his own weight guy, his old, you know, and obviously in his prime, Tiger was built like a Mack truck. But it's the training today of, and then the other golf pros said, well, if he's doing it, I have to. Is there better training on the PBA Tour?
Try getting into a hotel exercise room when the PBA Tour is in town at a hotel, because those guys, a lot of them are in those exercise rooms getting their workouts. You know, I Josh Blanchard, I see in there all the time. You get guys like Ron Moore on the senior tour, the guy's, you know, 61 years old.
Even the older guys.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Moore, he does 500 nice push-ups and 500 sit-ups a day, and, you know, that's one of the reasons why he's going to the PBA Hall of Fame in 2018.
Amoletto.
He keeps himself, Amoletto's super fit
all
as well.
All the stories of him.
Yeah, you don't see, you know, the old stereotype from the movie Kingpin, where, hey, we've got the greatest athletes and there's guys eating pizza. You don't get that on the PBA Tour. You can't, because it's, you know, even though it's easier on your, you know, the release and everything is a little easier on your wrist and everything, you're still covering the same amount of walking back and forth and carrying the bowling ball and all the other stuff. When you're doing that for 60 games of qualifying in the World Championship and then all the other match play rounds that were involved at the World Series this year, if you're not in shape, you're going to mentally fall apart and you're going to get left behind.
That's another good one to point out to these people that say, anybody can do it. No, not anybody can do what these guys are doing. Not anybody can do it at the level in which they're doing it at either.
And go back to Mookie Betts. What is Mookie Betts?
Mookie Betts, yeah.
Betts, right. Baseball player, training, physical condition.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no question about that. But again, you saw T.O. tried it, couldn't make it work. He, though, trained in this and had a skill in this. Obviously, he shot 825, did you say, in high school?
Yeah.
I mean, if he shoots that well in high school, you know, sometimes it's like riding a bike. It comes back to you eventually. Right. And obviously, I'm sure he got back in the groove a little bit, getting ready to come out here the last time. And now he comes out here this time. And you watch. If he comes back out here next year, he'll be even better next year.
Yeah.
Mark my words.
At a high level, it is an athletic position, athletic move at the finish.
I agree.
You have to have the strength in the right areas.
I mean, totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, how many other sports do you actually make a walking delivery of an object? There's not many. You don't do it in golf. You don't do it in baseball. I mean, football, if you're scrambling in the pocket and you're a quarterback. You know, other than that, quarterbacks are taught to plant their feet and throw the ball.
Right.
So it's not walking. It's not run and throw the ball.
All right, coming up next here on the Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show, it's the PBA's 60th anniversary, and they've got a whole bunch of stuff planned for this upcoming season. We'll talk about that next here on The Fan.
No. That's wrong. Here, hold on.
Woo! No, that's tomorrow. And they didn't lose to the Buccaneers as of yet. I mean, unless our voice guy knows something. Do we know if our voice guy knows something that we don't know?
The other room has the crystal ball.
What is going on here?
Let me make that call back out to the Silver Legacy in Reno.
Tell you right now, there. If the Packers lose this game, people listening to the show are going to be like, all right, somebody's got fessed up about the NFL. What is happening?
I need the lottery numbers for next week's Powerball drawing.
Right. What in the world is going on there? Yeah. Woo! Okay, then. All right, let's move on. Okay, so the 60th anniversary celebration for the PBA, and the PBA plans on doing a bunch of different stuff, obviously. The PBA 60th anniversary classic tournament, a 60th anniversary celebration dinner. The highlights of the 2018 season will be the unveiling of the 60 most memorable moments in PBA history as part of the PBA's ESPN television schedule beginning on February 4th, including on May 13th. Now, the list is formidable, including such moments as the inaugural meeting when the PBA was born. I don't know that story. Do you?
1958, Syracuse, New York. A bunch of guys met in a basement of a bowling alley, and 20-some guys signed up to be charter members of the PBA.
Really? Eddie Elias had to be there, I'm sure.
There's only a couple of them still around, one of them being Carmen Salvino.
Really?
He was one of the original.
He was one of the original charter
members. I did not know that.
Yep.
We gotta get him back.
I was gonna say I have to ask him about that story.
That,
right?
That sounds like a lot of fun. I'd like that story. He's got to have some funny stuff about that meeting.
I'm sure he does.
Oh, that's got to be good. Yeah, we gotta try and get him on. All right, PBA's first national telecast. All right, Phil. I'm sure he knows everything. So I'm just gonna go to Phil.
I think it was 1961, and I think a left-hander, Roy Lawn, won that event.
How
could be wrong on that
know
one.
Know that?
Hey, well, he works for the PBA. He's got to know it.
I'm a sponge of useless knowledge, Dwight.
Yes. All right. Don Johnson's historic 299 in the Tournament of Champions, and
Billy Weilucall on that.
Jack Biondalolo's. I don't even know how to say that name. Biondalolo. That's long. First nationally televised 300.
And that was 50 years ago now for that.
50 already?
For Biondalolo's 300, yeah. That was an interesting story, too, because he was so far behind on owing people sponsors that he had on tour money that if he didn't shoot that 300 and get the money for it, he was going to be done. Yeah.
Wow, that's a pressure shot then.
If you want to be a bowling fan, though, and watch a great clip, it has to be Johnson's 299 game and the call on that. Just gives you chills.
Well, right. And the neat part about that, tying into the 60th anniversary celebration this year, is that we're back to Riviera Lanes in Akron, Ohio for the PBA Tournament of Champions. We haven't been there since the last Firestone, and I believe it was 97, 98. Been quite a while since we've been to Akron, so looking forward to seeing that historic bowling center as well.
Have they done anything to it since then?
I'm sure it's an AMF-owned center now, so I'm sure there's been some changes, but I guess a lot of the trophies and a lot of the memorabilia are still there from the days of the Firestone Tournament of Champions.
Yeah, and wasn't that the show that always ended the year for the PBA?
On ABC. ABC? That was always the final, usually the final one on ABC.
All right, next moment, Mark Roth's unmatched season when he won 8 PBA Tour titles. Will it ever be done again?
77?
Oh, sure. I think records are made to be broken.
That's a lot.
And that was out of 30 some events.
You don't have as many.
Yeah, it's getting closer. I mean, we had 8 events in the Extra Frame Tour.
I could see Belmo or another two-hander.
But guys, look, Swenson, if we all say
get on a roll,
that these young guns are as talented as we think they are, I think that's going to be a tough deal. If they're all as good as we think, and you have a new group coming that are going to be battling each other every week, I think it's going to be tough to do.
Was Roth dominant in his era? Yes, absolutely. But I don't know.
It's pretty tough. And, the formats nowadays, it's a lot of those formats for these extra frame events, it's basically 22 games to get to a title. It's a little shorter format. Somebody can get hot for a few more games. Where back in the day with Roth, it was 42 games, and it was tougher to get by a guy that was firing it up all year long. A lot of times, though, back in the tour in the 70s, though, these guys were using one or two bowling balls a year. The shot was pretty similar going from tournament to tournament. I mean, you asked Marshall Holman, we asked him about bowling balls, and he goes, well, I used 4 in a year.
Yeah.
He goes, I carried 4 around in my trunk for 2 years. That's all I used on tour. Nowadays, these guys go through 4 in a squad.
And bowling fans knew, again, being a kid, and I remember, this like yesterday, you want to talk about standing room only at Bolero when Mark Roth was on a pair of lanes? As a kid, I had to crawl through guys' legs to take a glimpse at Mark Roth because it was just packed with people.
You don't get that as much anymore.
No,
because he was such an oddity for his era.
Yeah, for sure. The next one, Earl Anthony breaking the $1 million barrier in career earnings. Obviously, that's
well deserved.
Walter Ray Williams Jr. breaking Earl Anthony's career titles record, and I looked this up quick for that one. You're talking about right now, Walter Ray Williams Jr. 47 titles. Earl Anthony, 43 titles. Still bowling, Norm Duke, 38 titles.
Yep.
Pete Weber, 37. Parker Bone III, 35. And then there is Mark Roth at 34. So Duke, Weber, and Bone still bowling. None of them will catch Walter Ray at 47, I don't think.
No. There's no way. They're all in their, 53, 54 years old. It's not going to happen. You might see one of them win a title.
Yep.
Down the road,
of these other guys that are still on tour, Chris Barnes, 18, not going to happen.
No.
Tommy Jones, 18, not going to happen. Let's see. Salvino's at 17. Couch is coaching now. Belmonte, 15, not going to happen. Too old. I don't know if that record's going to be touched.
No.
That's
I don't know
lot.
About that one, but one of the greatest clips I ever saw was Walter Ray Williams pitching horseshoes.
Oh, yeah, he's really good at
it. Well, not only that, he has exactly the same form pitching horseshoes that he does throwing a bowling ball. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, that's muscle memory, repetitive movement that made him so good.
What about Kelly Kulig becoming the first and only woman to win a PBA Tour title? Boys, does it happen again in the next 10 years?
Well, Liz Johnson's on a TV show.
That's good.
She's got a shot. She's on The Chameleon.
She's really good. But are there the young and upcoming women that are on the women's tour that have a chance to be a factor?
There's not a lot of them that cross over. There were four at the World Series of Bowling this year
that were attempting it.
Yeah.
I think some of their games are excellent, though. Some of these girls that are coming out of college and how well they've been coached, Del Warren, I mean, the group that they do down at Kegel, I think these college girls are so well coached, but
it's such a different world to go against the men. It's just a different world with the rev rates and the oil depletion and changing
Annika
lines.
Annika Storenson's story with golf and trying to go against the boys in golf, you know, and Annika in her prime, you know, it's that same scenario.
Yeah.
That's a tough deal. Next one, Pete Weber winning the U.S. Open for
who do you
the
think
fifth
you are?
Time.
I am.
Yeah, that will always go down in that area. And then how would you rank these and more than 100 additional moments over a span of 60 years? That's the task of many of the bowling sport's most experienced observers have been asked to answer, and fans will be invited to make their selections as well. That's going to be cool because obviously everybody will get to debate which belongs where. All right, coming up next, obviously we will have our first ESPN telecast coming up next weekend, so we can talk more about the World Series of Bowling next weekend and more about what happened this last summer. But coming up next, I want to touch a little bit on high school bowling with Phil Brilow because he texted me, what was it, this week, right?
Last Sunday, yeah.
About one specific high school bowling team that he thinks is in line to win this whole thing this year. We'll talk about that coming up next. It's Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. Welcome back, Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show. Go check out Phil Anko's place, Castle Lane's in Racine. Got that Northwoods feel. Kind of feels like you are in an, I don't know, log cabin, maybe up north somewhere. It's just done a great job with it. And, of course, $5 open bowling on Friday nights. Castle Lane's in Racine, Highway 31. Again, thanks to him for being a sponsor of this show for another season. And a sponsor of the big show now, too. Okay, so, Dwight, before we got to break, I told you coming out of the last break, I said I wanted to talk to you about your pro shop, and I will. But first, Phil, high school bowling, tell me all about Sun Prairie, who you like.
We had our kickoff classic last weekend at Motion Plus Lanes for the high school boys. Sun Prairie just dominated the qualifying. They came out of the gates 12-54 for a five-man team game.
Oh.
So just averaging 250 a guy.
No big deal.
Followed up with 11 and change, followed up with some Baker games. They were our number one seed for TV show that'll be on Spectrum Sports in a couple of weeks, and they are going to be the team to beat in high school on the boys' side this year. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Oak Creek beat them in the state finals last year, but that's only a two-game total pin Baker match. Team catches a break, other team doesn't.
But that's didn't the they difference. Go to Nashville and win it in Nashville?
They had the tournament Mike Nitre ran down in the Nashville area called the National High School Championships.
Yep.
It wasn't all the top teams from the states. It wasn't all the top teams from all 50 U.S. states.
I know Oak Creek was down there.
Yeah, but Andrew Olson won the singles from Sun Prairie, and then Sun Prairie, I believe, won the team championship
I'm hearing it in the shop about these guys. They're the real deal.
Like, I'd put them up against some of the local college teams.
Like that good? Really?
Yeah.
So there's like no weak link on this team. They're just all stacked.
No, they're the team to beat in the state of Wisconsin.
I would love to watch them
go.
I'd love to watch them throw.
I don't think anybody gets within 100 pins of them at the state tournament.
Any two-handed bowlers amongst them?
Yeah, Andrew Olson's two-handed on that team, and he throws it really well, and he's got Belmo speed and rev rate.
Really?
Being two-handed, yeah. They're solid. They make their spares. They don't leave too many open frames on the board. And I believe this is going to be the last year you're going to be able to do it because I think four of the five starters are seniors.
So this is – they want to win state after losing it last year.
After losing it last year, yep, in a tough match to Oak Creek.
So they're on a mission.
Yes, they are.
Good luck. Did Oak Creek return everybody this year?
Oak Creek lost a bunch of players. Actually, they have to have a couple of young ladies on their team this year because they didn't have enough ladies for a girls' team at Oak Creek.
Yeah, we had Caitlin in studio last year. I know she's on.
So she's on the boys' team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. And Oak Creek was our Oak Creek's our number two seed behind Sun Prairie on our
TV
Spectrum Sports show in a couple of weeks. Yeah,
that's awesome. So make sure to look for that. I don't have Spectrum Sports. I have DirecTV. So
I'll get you a DVD.
I can record it here at the studio. Hey, Dwight, I just want to ask you one thing. How does bowling maintain popularity in the summer? Go ahead.
Oh, God. Has it ever?
You've got 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Chop, chop.
Well, it's our off season, so it'd be like golf in the winter. I mean,
No, but you can't golf in the winter. I can bowl year-round.
I don't know. That's a pretty loaded question.
Because if – right. That's why I waited to the end for you.
Well, thanks for throwing it for me right at 2 minutes to go.
The bowling centers have all went to volleyball for the summer. And that's how they've decided that they're going to make their money. I mean, literally, like, every bowling center has a volleyball court. And if you don't, you're dead.
My answer is we're a seasonal sport. You know, I mean
– No, but you're not. It's – you can bowl year-round. It'd be like saying – I'll give you an example. Is it a form of entertainment, bowling? Yes, it's a form of entertainment, right? Is it a family-type deal? Yes, it's a family-type deal. Dave and Buster's, that's a family-type entertainment deal or whatever else. They're going year-round.
Yeah, we offer instruction class during the summer. We have adult junior leagues over the summer for parents and the kids to bowl together.
I don't know if they still have them. Back when I was bowling, they used to have the Vegas summer leagues. Where you win a trip to Vegas or whatever if you bowled during the summer. All kinds of different things.
We need a proprietor to have an idea where how do we get people in during the summer. That's the biggest thing is how do we keep the draw?
You know, right.
I mean, when
because the thought process is, well, it's so nice outside, nobody wants to be inside. That's the thought process of why it doesn't work, right? Am I wrong about that?
Well, it's the other thing too is it's a long winter season. I mean, it's 33 weeks.
It's a long season.
So people like to see that break,
right?
But some bowlers like to go year round too. So
that's another question.
Thanks for throwing me that question right before we go off the air.
Well, you have till next week to figure it out. Phil, thanks so much. What's coming up on PBA.com?
A couple of weeks off on Extra Frame, but look for features on the PBA YouTube channel about all the shows that are coming up. There'll be some pretty nice little featurettes about the bowlers making the shows. And
sweet.
Look forward to that.
So we'll talk more about the World Series of Bowling coming up next week. Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. Dwight, are you busy?
Oh, definitely. Great year this year for ball releases. So the bowlers are stepping up and really liking what they're seeing and coming in and buying from us.
People emailing me all the time how to get a hold of Dwight. I just keep pushing them
over
there.
Yeah, one guy
there.
Just came in and mentioned
you.
Yep, so thank you.
It's been happening. All right, that'll do it. Castle Lane's Spare Time Bowling Show here on The Fan. Enjoy the rest of your day. Go Pack, go. 100 stories high. People
are getting loose, y'all. You're getting down. We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.